Ladies and gentlemen, once again, good morning and welcome to the White House. Please direct your attention to the screen at the front of the auditorium. Here is a portion of the currently running HBO documentary, Triangle, Remembering the Fire.
The Triangle Factory was in one of the city's newest skyscrapers, just off of Washington Square Park, on the top three floors of the Ash Building. Up until this point, the garment industry had been spread out in tenement buildings throughout the city. Now companies could crowd hundreds of workers together under one roof in huge loft spaces with powerful machines. For the first time, women were wearing shirtwaists, separate tops, like men. Isaac Harris and Max Blank, the owners of the Triangle Waist Company, were known as the Shirtwaist Kings and made millions from this new fashion trend. The International Ladies Garment Workers Union, the ILGWU, began to organize garment workers across the city. Triangle was one of the largest factories, which made it a focal point of union activity. In September of 1909, a strike started at the factory, which soon spread across the city. The general strike of 1909 became known as the Uprising of the 20,000. It was the first large strike of women in this country, and at a time when they still didn't have the vote. The participants were mainly young immigrant girls, many of whom didn't even speak English. Some owners gave into the union, but with the help of city government, Blank and Harris were able to weather the strike at Triangle. The workers eventually returned to the factory without union recognition. It was back to business as usual until the day of the fire. On a Saturday afternoon in late March, 500 workers filed into the Triangle factory. Most of them had already put in a 60-hour work week. No one was prepared for what was about to happen. The fire broke out on the eighth floor at about 4:40 in the afternoon, just as people were finishing up for the day. Investigators believe it was started by a discarded cigarette. Highly flammable stacks of fabric and paper patterns caused the fire to spread quickly across the floor. The workers panicked and started running for the exits all at once. They had never had fire drills. There was no plan. Nobody knew what to do.
The fire brought everybody together. There was such overwhelming sadness and guilt. That scene of those women just wouldn't go away. And time and he had to change or die.
Al Smith and Robert Wagner set up the Factory Investigating Commission. They brought on board many of the leading reformers of the day. Frances Perkins, who would become the first woman Secretary of Labor, was on the commission. She happened to be in Washington Square Park the day of the fire and witnessed the young women jumping out of the windows. She would go on to say that the New Deal started March 25th, 1911. Also asked to participate were Rose Schneiderman, the legendary labor union activist, and Clara Lemlich, the catalyst of the shirtwaist uprising. The commission's findings led to the enactment of laws in New York that mandated safety standards, minimum wage, support for people when they lose their jobs, and assistance when they are too old to work. What started in New York paved the way for FDR's New Deal.
The legislation that came out of the Triangle fire kind of evened the scales a little bit. It gave working people some support from the government so that they could organize unions, they could fight. That was a huge turning point for labor. Through the unions, they weren't just yids and honkies and wops anymore. They were American workers. They had something. You know, they could be part of this country in a way that they couldn't be before.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome U.S. Secretary of Labor, Hilda L. Solis.
Thank you. Good morning. Buenos dias. And a special hello to my hermanas, my friends, my girlfriends, our friends, our family. And welcome to the White House. This is a very exciting day for many of us, and I'm delighted that all of you could join us here for this historic event. I want to begin by thanking the White House for graciously hosting us here this morning. And I'd like to recognize a few people here with us who are doing so much on our behalf of working people across this country. And if they would please stand and be acknowledged. Arlene Holt Baker, Executive Vice President, AFL-CIO. Liz Shuler, Secretary Treasurer, AFL-CIO. Chris Neff, International Vice President, UFCW. Sarita Gupta, Jobs with Justice. Kim Freeman Brown, America Rights at Work. Ai Jin Poo, Domestic Workers. And one of our trailblazing women in Congress, Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey from California. And a big thank you also to those from the faith-based community here today who do so much to support workers' rights and economic justice. I'd also like to recognize Daphne Pinkerson, the producer of the moving HBO documentary from which we just saw a brief piece. Please stand and be recognized, Daphne. Daphne, your film is helping to shed an important light on the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire and the many who sacrificed then and today to improve conditions for working Americans. In fact, I was just in New York this last Friday to commemorate the event, the 100th anniversary, on the steps, a short walk away from the factory. And believe me, it was very, very moving to be there and to meet the family and relatives of some of these women who gave their life working hard, trying to organize, and are a symbol of freedom for so many of us. And I can say with great confidence that your film truly captures that spirit. So thank you again, Daphne, for bringing this crucial part of our American history to the television screens. And of course, most of all, I want to thank all of you, the courageous women and a few brave men who have joined us here today in our audience. We're here at the White House to honor the lives of the Triangle garment workers, to remember the high price they paid for the workplace protections that we now have, and to help underscore their legacy as it lives on in the work of today's women and their collective action. A century later, we reflect not only on the loss of 146 lives that tragic afternoon, but also the movement they inspired and the commitment of those who carry on their call for reform and justice. The Triangle Factory fire taught us that we must protect the most vulnerable among us, that we must provide safeguards and a safety net for all workers, and that we must ensure that every person has a voice at their job. Today, we celebrate these lessons and we focus on the unique role that women have in organizing to create real change in their communities and neighborhoods. The workers at Triangle wanted the same rights that many workers still struggle for today. And like workers today, in the face of great adversity, the women of Triangle stood up and fought for those rights. They fought for fair wages, for safe workplaces, and for better working conditions. Together, they tried to also form a union. They understood, like we do, that when workers have a voice, their working conditions are better. Their workplaces are safer, and their families are more secure. And although their efforts were halted abruptly, they inspired our country for generations to come. In 2011, we move forward stronger because of them. We know that their voices and their spirits live on in the actions and commitment of countless women who continue to fight for the same rights and for justice for all across this great nation. And in just a few minutes, we're going to hear from some of those courageous women from all walks of life who traveled from everywhere in the country to be with us today. They will tell us their stories and invite us into their struggles. We will hear how each of them is organizing to make a difference in their workplaces, in the lives of their families, and in their communities. But before we hear them, I'd like to introduce another amazing woman, one chosen by our president to serve in this administration because she shares her heartfelt belief that working people deserve a voice and have a rightful place in this country. A tireless advocate for America's working families and for women everywhere, she serves as senior advisor and assistant to President Barack Obama. In her role, she chairs the White House Council on Women and Girls and oversees the White House Office of Intergovernmental Affairs and the Office of Public Engagement. She is truly a champion of justice, and I feel so fortunate to call her a friend, my amiga. Please join me in welcoming Ms. Valerie Jarrett.
Thank you. Please have a seat. Thank you so much. Thank you, Hilda, for that wonderful introduction. Congresswoman, you really bless us by your presence here today. We know how busy you are, and it means so much to have your support. To all of you, my goodness, what a terrific way to start a Monday morning with, as Hilda said, all these amazing women and these few very brave men. We're glad to have you as well as we kick off this very important day. I want to begin by thanking Secretary Solis for her incredible leadership in the Department of Labor and for organizing this wonderful event. Please, another round of applause for Hilda. As we mark both Women's History Month and the 100th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire, we felt it was important here at the White House, working with the Department of Labor, to host this event and hear the stories of the women who we are just thrilled to have you join us today. The Triangle Fire resonates with us all. 100 years later, and that film was extraordinary. Not only because of the magnitude of the tragedy, but also because it galvanized a movement for women to stand up and demand better working conditions, safer workplaces, and the right to have each of their voices heard. And it serves as a reminder that so many of the benefits and the rights that we all enjoy today have been because of the sacrifices and the hard work and the commitment of both men and women who came before us. And even as there are some who question the role of unions in our country today, we know that all working families have benefited and continue to benefit from the fights organized labor wage for safe, humane conditions, the minimum wage, health care, and many other women's rights. Don't you agree? When the president took office, he said, quote, "I don't view the labor movement as a part of the problem. To me, it's a part of the solution. Because we know that you cannot have a strong middle class without a strong labor movement. And every day, in ways big and small, those are the principles that the president, that the secretary, that our administration has lived by, ensuring a safe workplace, balancing the playing field for working families, appointing leaders who recognize and appreciate the rights of workers to organize and collective bargain, building an economy that can create and sustain good jobs, and recognizing that working people are our partners in our efforts to get the country back on a solid economic footing." As we commemorate this anniversary on Women's History Month, we should reflect on the remarkable courage standing up for their rights that so many women have done. Their continued fight has made a huge difference. Women now make up half the workforce. 2/3 of all working families have a single woman heading the household or two heads of household. And their paychecks are so critical to the families, particularly in these economically challenging times. So as chair of the White House Council on Women and Girls, I've had an opportunity to hear stories from women all over our country, from all walks of life, each working hard, bit by bit, to make a difference for change positive change to improve the quality of lives for people around our country. And so I respect and I appreciate the courage of the women whose stories that you're about to hear today and their commitment and hard work for everyone in this room. And we deeply appreciate your presence. And so now, without any further ado, Khalil and I are going to get started, and we're going to hear some stories and then have a conversation. Thank you again.
Thank you, Valerie. We're going to begin. I'm going to introduce our first speaker here, and this is Deanna Beezy, who is a child care provider in Ohio. She is a member of ASME. Child care workers in her home state were recently granted collective bargaining rights under Governor Strickland, though those rights are now in jeopardy as a result of legislation that is currently pending in that state legislature because of a new governor there. Deanna will talk to us a little bit about her life and working conditions and talk about the action, collective action that is going on there and in your profession. And if we could just begin to please tell us a little bit about yourself and what it means to be a child care worker and how long you've worked at it and also why you decided to become an organizer. Deanna.
Okay, my name is Deanna and I'm a child care provider from Ohio. I love what I do. I think that working moms everywhere are more productive, they're less stressed when they know that their child is well taken care of and well loved. I don't see any other job more important to a working mom. She can't bring home that paycheck without that. So with that being said, what does being a child care provider mean? Well, I'll tell you, if you want to make a child care provider angry, just call us a babysitter. So a babysitter is a teenager who comes to your house, eats your food, talks on your phone, gets on your internet, you know, maybe takes a nap. So that's not what we do. So when two women came to my home about 2 years ago and said that we were getting a group together to organize, I was ecstatic. I came from a union home. My dad's a retired sprinkler fitter. My mother was a nuclear security officer at a nuclear power plant. She was very active in her union. So I know what the union can do for working families. If it wouldn't be for the union, my family would not have been so lucky growing up. So that's for the union. And one of the things that we faced as child care providers is you get your certification, they come in your home, they inspect you, they ask you to do all these things, you do, they give you this big old book of rules. Here you go. Take care of these children, follow these rules, and you'll be all good. Unfortunately, the people who make the rules, there were no child care providers involved in making these rules. So you may have people making these rules who maybe don't have children. Maybe they don't even know any children. So they're kind of impractical. So one of the first things that we discussed when we wanted to get the union going is, you know, we can get a voice. And as an individual, I have a voice. But as a group, we have a louder voice. So better heard. So we got a petition, and we signed. We went all around to child care providers all over Ohio. We got them to sign a petition. We took it to the governor. He granted us some bargaining power, and we got on committees, and we bargained for our first contract, so which was exciting. Another thing in child care is that we provide care for subsidized families. Those are families who work, and they receive help from the government paying for their daycare bill. So the way that works is we make out an invoice, we send it on to the county, and it gets approved, and then sometime you get your check. For me in my county, I was very lucky. I have a great staff at my county. They're very efficient. They're just wonderful. Some of the other counties of the ladies that I worked with, some of them were not getting their paycheck for 90 days. Now, I don't know one person who would accept a position with the company where they said, we'll pay you in 90 days. So we got our bargaining power, we got our contract, and now the state of Ohio has did a statewide payment system. So everyone sends their invoices in at the same time. They are processed. It's all done on the computer. Everyone can look and see when they're processed, where the process is, if it has been received, when it's being paid, and it's directly deposited into our bank account. So that is one of the most important things that we received payment for these poor, poor ladies. When you're living paycheck to paycheck, 90 days, that's a long time to go. So another thing we received was we received the opportunity to get health care insurance. As you can imagine, being a lot of child care providers are single women with children of their own. And as you can imagine, not very affordable health care. So we were able to receive that as a part of our benefit package. So the union has worked wonders for us. And I tell you, I have faith. I have faith in God. I have faith in this country. I have faith in a democratic process. And I have faith that collective bargaining is going to go on. My sisters and I in Ohio are going to keep on fighting.
Thank you.
What a terrific story. Thank you so much. I now have the pleasure of introducing to you Allison Julian. Allison is a domestic worker from New York. She's originally from Barbados. She spent the last two decades as a nanny and the last 9 years as a member of the Domestic Workers United. So thank you for joining us. Allison became an organizer in 2002 and is very proud of her continued efforts to unite workers in the fight for fair labor standards. We really appreciate your being with us here today, Allison. And I want to start by saying first, if you'd share with us your story, what you've learned over the last 20 years as a domestic worker, and what it is that people don't know about workers such as you and your work, and what did you help to achieve when you joined your union and became so active in the organization?
Thanks for having me. Again, I am from Barbados, and I grew up taking care of my nieces and nephews, so for me, the love of kids in my life was something I was always surrounded by. When I came to this country, I got involved in taking care of kids, being a nanny, and it was the most gratifying feeling ever. To this day, it is still that feeling. I leave work gratified knowing my kids are happy, and I call them my kids. I'm with them for 10 hours a day. They become my kids. I leave them happy, they're smiling, they're well taken care of, and our day is filled with fun. That's, like Deanne was saying, that's the responsibility of us as nannies, as childcare providers, is to make kids happy when they're in our care. As a domestic worker, and we are nannies, housekeepers, and elderly caregivers, we give to families. We come into your homes, we take care of your elderly parents, we take care of your kids, we take care of your home, we clean your home, and that's the most rewarding work there is. We began organizing domestic workers, and how I got involved is my mother and my grandmother were also domestic workers. Hearing their stories, realizing doing this work, my stories became their stories. And they didn't have the voice. They didn't have the power to stand up, to make change. They probably didn't even know where to go. And upon hearing about Domestic Workers United in 2002, I immediately knew that this was where I had to be a voice not only for myself, but in honoring my mother and my grandmother who had done this work for many years. I wanted to be that voice to speak out for them. This is a work that's not going away. Domestic work is not going away anytime soon. This work has been around for decades, and it's going to be around for decades to come. And organizationally, we realized that we could not continue working under exclusions. We were specifically excluded from major labor laws within this country, and we knew as workers we had to do something. So in 2003, we started organizing a campaign for the Bill of Rights for domestic workers, because so many workers like myself faced terrible working conditions. We were fired without notice, without pay. We couldn't take sick days off without being either fired or not being paid for these sick days. And like, we take care of the kids of our family. We also have our families as well that depends on us. And if we're not being paid and if we're not treated well, these are the stresses and the problems that we then in turn take home to our families. So after organizing domestic workers in New York City, for 6.5 years, we lobbied Albany, and last fall, in November of last year, we were successful in achieving the first ever domestic worker Bill of Rights in this country. And it just goes to show the importance of not one voice, but many voices. We can do this. Domestic workers are mainly immigrant women of color, and we've been told we couldn't do it. We've been told that we didn't have a place to do this, and we proved legislators wrong. This work was done before by African Americans, and it wasn't no protection for them. And we as immigrant women, like our sisters in the Triangle Fire, we wanted to make it known that we as workers, we as women, we have a voice, and we refuse to be silenced.
Great. Ernestine Bassett is a Walmart associate from Laurel, Maryland, and she works for one of the largest retail giants now for the past 4 years. She's committed to bringing a collective voice for workers at that particular location. She's a retired technician from Verizon, where she was a member of CWA. I know we had spoke a little bit. You said you weren't active with CWA at the time, but now things have changed in your place of employment. And I think people want to hear basically what your view is on that and how you're feeling and what are we going to do?
Okay, hi, I'm Ernestine. I work at Walmart in Maryland. And the first thing I want to say is that history does repeat itself. The factory fire in New York occurred, or the loss of 146 lives occurred, because the doors were locked. Well, as recently as 10, maybe 12 years, Walmart was doing the same thing. They were locking the doors on their workers. Luckily, there was never fires, but they were actually locking the doors on their workers. I came to Walmart 4 years ago, saw a big difference between this non-union company and Verizon. It's a company, it's like night and day. No respect. They treat you like a moron, basically. I love my job, I really do. It's somewhat physical, but I love the customers. When people have a need to speak out, to talk to someone, whether it's good things or bad things, and I am that face, they will come in and just spill their lives to me. I do not know their names. But they will come back and start calling me Ernestine. They see my name tag. They remember that. Hi, Ernestine, how you doing? That make me feel well. I feel that I have connected with these people. That's a great feeling. I love my coworkers. We're like family. We are like family. We really are. Sometimes we spend more time together than we do with our actual families. And it's great. Walmart is a $1 billion company, the biggest employer in the company, but they pay very small wages. They do not pay living wages. There are so many workers at the store in Laurel who depend on the government for housing, Section 8, food stamps, because Walmart do not pay living wages. So about a year, year and a half, I got involved, and I'm so glad I did. I really feel that I was put there. I retired from the telephone company in 99. I had to go back to work because of the economic downturn. Walmart was there, gave me a job, which I'm grateful. But something needs to be done. They are taking advantage of a lot of people. It needs to end. And so started organizing, and things are going good. We've come a long way in a year. More people are speaking up, seeing that things are not right. We are all in this together trying to make a difference.
Thank you, Ernestine.
Now I have the pleasure of introducing to you Lillian Becker. Lillian is a bilingual customer service representative with more than 8 years of experience. She came to the United States 14 years ago and works for a major telecommunications firm at the company's Fort Lauderdale office in Florida. For the past year and a half, Lillian has been working with the Communication Workers of America to ensure that workers at her company are treated fairly. Lillian speaks four languages, is a mother to a 10-year-old son, and supports her elderly parents. So Lillian, I'd like to just begin by asking you what you hoped to achieve when you came to the United States and when you started working for your current employer. And some people today often argue that unions undercut the ability of business to compete, and I'd like you to share your thoughts on that subject with us.
Sure, thank you. Good morning. You have no idea how proud I feel to be here. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I work for T-Mobile. I'm coming here as a regular customer service. In my position, I came from Peru. And I have to be in front of a monitor with a headset 10 hours a day, 4 days on a row. That's my shift. It's a lucky shift that I got. And I've been a year and a half counting with the support of people from CWA, telling me that, you know, we can make a difference. We can make the things working good. At the beginning, when I started on T-Mobile, I was so excited about the values because it was posting everywhere. I'm T-Mobile, count on me. We are concerned about people. We care about our persons. So I said, wow, this is the place I want to be. Because not only because I'm coming from a country that is poor and I was making an okay salary, but here I'm going to make a good salary and I'm also going to be recognized as a person too. Turns out that it's not that way, unfortunately. I do that to my customers, to every single customer. I have to do a world-class experience, and my commitment is to do that because I have a kid, and I have to lead by example, you know? If I do it good, my kid has to do it too. So I got the concern about the people and treat them right and recognize that they are such a loyal customer for having 10 years with us. And I said, thank you, Mr. Customer. And the customer says, wow, thank you for making so personalized this treatment. Thank you very much, Liliana. You made me feel so comfortable and important. No, you deserve that. But when I turned my back to my boss and I said, may I have permission, because I have to do my citizenship, and it's on one of those days that you have blocked the day. Can I get this day off? Sorry, there is nothing we can do. We have to do it today. You have to be absent. But I'm so glad that you are becoming a resident, and you're going to be a citizen already. So, you know, things like that, and things like see systems on me that don't work well when I try to do my best experience to the customer. And I said, boss, this is not working good. This system is no good. And I asked my coworker, hey, do you consider this is okay? No. Did you tell that to our coach? Yes. What she said, well, tough luck. We have to continue doing it. You know, and says, but this is not the right thing. This is not what the customers want. Why don't we do this instead? Can you please, you know, tell that and escalate this idea to someone else? And they said, no, Liliana, we cannot do that. If we complain too much, they can take the project overseas to Costa Rica, to Puerto Rico, to some other country, to Panama, and we are going to lose our jobs. I don't want to lose my job. I came to America to become my dream come true, you know? But now I don't have voice. The only voice I have is when I talk to the customer, and I wow the customer, but at work, there is no wow there. So I found this lady from CWA giving flyers, and the security says, don't grab the flyer because, you know, they are people that are trying to close the job. So secretly from, you know, with the caller ID block, I called this lady and I told her, first of all, I won't tell you my name, okay? But tell me this, are you planning to take this overseas? Because I came to America and I'm making a decent money. I don't want this to close, but I have ideas and they never want to hear those. And they say, no, of course we don't want to close it, Liliana. We start becoming like friends, you know? And I feel relief. I feel like my ideas are not bad at all, you know? So I share with another friends and co-workers there, and we have something in common. We want to do the best possible. We want to make it more profitable. We want T-Mobile to succeed, go beyond. Now we belong to AT&T, which is kind of a relief in a certain way. And we expect to have that union, not because we want more salary. We are good workers, we do a quality service, but aside from that money, we want that recognition. We want that, gain our respect back. We want to feel that we are persons again, and our ideas can be heard. And believe me, we want to make the company grow. We want to stay in the United States. We don't want to close our call center. We want protection. If we feel sick and we don't have voice, we want that time to say, yes, you are sick, go ahead. Go on, we will put a segment, we can work with your hours and things like that. Now we are not allowed to be sick. Now we are not allowed to have certain days on vacation. We are not recognition, but people that give their life, they work 10 years with me, and they don't have that appreciation for the company enough, you know? If you live there and you spend those many years, at least as a T-Mobile boss, you can say, here, Lisbeya, here, Mary, we appreciate what you did, as we do as a customer. We recognize that customer. Thank you, Mr. Customer, for being with T-Mobile. We want that thank you, employee, for being with me. I know that you stay here, and I want you to feel that this is your home. I don't want the day-by-day work. I want to be proud. I want to be happy to stay there. So that way, everything is going to be better. That's how I see, you know? And that's why we are joining together secretly in my apartment, because we don't want to go to public places. Until we
thank
know.
You, Liliana. I think you may have another job out there, because you're doing well up here. But I know time is of the essence right now, and Valerie has to leave. Valerie Jarrett, who stayed here to hear your stories in particular. It was so important for her to have you tell your story so she could hear. And I know that she appreciates it, and we appreciate her for being here and being our strong voice and leader on women and girls' issues and everything she does here on behalf of our president, and we want to thank her. So please stand, give her a round of applause. Valerie, thank you.
Thank you all very much. Really, the standing ovation goes to these terrific women who really came and shared their stories. We could We could feel your heart and your passion and your love for what you do and your dedication to make your employer strong. And so your message is really one that resonates with all of us. So I apologize for having to scoop it. Thank you again, everyone, for being here. And now I'll turn it over to Hilda for the rest of the program. Thank you.
So we are going to go for a second round here. And please, if people need water, you know, I know it's a little warm up here. Deanna, I wanted to ask you in this question here, what advice would you give to women across the country who are maybe watching us right now at this moment, who are feeling alone and helpless and worried about their work situation, just like I'm sure you are, and possibly also what's the next step now with respect to your job security because of what the legislation, the new legislation that will now take away the ability for you to have protections, a collective bargaining. So if you could help us understand that, that would be great.
Well, first of all, I would tell them, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to get involved. Don't be afraid to pick up that phone and make a phone call and ask. No matter what your job is, there is a union out there to help you. I don't care what it is. It only takes one person to make one phone call, and believe me, thousands of people will follow. It happened in Ohio, I'm here to tell you. So they could that's all they have to do, just seek out, make a phone call, and keep making phone calls until you get an answer. And don't be afraid. Don't feel like you're alone. You are never alone. There are women all over this country who are there to support you, so they should never feel alone. And right now in Ohio, it is terrifying for us. It is very, very scary. For my sisters and brothers in Wisconsin, scared for them as well. But as I said, I have faith, and I have faith that we are going to keep on fighting. We're not giving up. We are not giving up. Great.
What are some of the plans that are taking place on the ground?
Well, right now in Ohio, we have already passed, our legislators have passed a bill that is going on for a full vote in the Senate. It just passed a committee vote right now. We are protesting, we are lobbying the people who will be voting, and we are telling them that they need to vote no. We need our collective bargaining. We need it. Everyone needs it. And I really, truly, I have faith in this democratic process that we're going to fight and we're going to win.
Deanna, you mentioned something to me before we came in about your mother. Share that with us, if you would.
My mom was the first female police officer in our county. So she pretty much infiltrated the good old boys network, what she did. Before I came a child care provider, I was a security manager in a mall. 82 malls across the country, not one female security manager. Guess what? Right here. Infiltrated the good old boys network there. So I did that with the support of my mom, and she became a nuclear security officer. She worked at a nuclear power plant. She was very, very involved in the union there. They worked sometime 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. The benefits that they received throughout their many, many, many bargaining activities were, you know, the company paid for shoes, coats for them to wear outside, many, many health benefits, the benefits were phenomenal. That was a really, really tough, tough job. And my mom was my best friend, and she was my role model. And one of the last things that my mom got to do when she was sick and she was under hospice care is she got a visit from her brothers and sisters in her union. And she made it to the age of 59 and a half and she received her retirement gift from those Union brothers and sisters. They are there from the beginning to the end, and that is what the Union does.
Thank you. Okay. Allison, I have a question for you. You talked about the isolation in your particular workplace, and I could understand that, but share with us a little bit more about what that means when the door closes, the employer leaves, what happens, and how does that really feel to be able to find that there are other people now outside that you've been able to work with to help look at how you organize this kind of work, because it seems so difficult that maybe you could share that with us.
And that's absolutely right. We work in a workplace where we work two employers to one employee. That alone is a challenge for many of us. Like I mentioned earlier, we are excluded from labor laws. So it's really myself and my employers. Who do I go to bargain? Who do I go to ask for time off or to bargain that time off with but my employers? And it's really hard. It's very hard because the challenge is many times, and there are two different kinds of domestic workers. There is the domestic worker who does the 10 or 12-hour day and goes home. Then there's the domestic worker that lives in the employer's home. They are at complete mercy of the employers. They're there before sunup and well after sunset. There is no time for breaks. There is no time for a lunch hour. Many of us work under long conditions. We can do a 10 or a 12-hour shift. We don't have anybody to say, hold the baby, I'm going for a break, or hold the baby, I'm going for lunch. We are there for those 10 straight hours without breaks, without lunch. When we're sick, many of us have to be on the job, because if we're not, we're not compensated for the day loss. Many of us are parents. We don't go to work because we have to stay home with our sick kids or because we have PDA meetings to attend. We don't get compensated for that. They are good employers out there who want to do the right thing, but there are no guidelines out there for these employers to follow. And that's our ask, is for legislators to recognize that employers need guidelines to follow so that we, the workers, could feel protected, so that we, the workers, know what our responsibilities are. This is a partnership between the employer and the employee. And if the employers don't know and the employees don't know, this is just making conditions right for exploitation, for abuse, for oppression. And these are all the things that goes on within this industry. We work in the shadows of slavery. If we don't tell the stories, nobody else will tell our stories. Many of us, some of us, and there are stories of women within the organization who've been beaten on the job, who've been raped on the job, who've been forced to sleep on the floor without blankets, without pillows. Think about that for a second. This is work. Your home becomes our workplace. And it's not fair for any worker to have to work under those conditions. And with Domestic Workers United being there as that voice for many domestic workers, we have somewhere to go. We're not trying to get rich doing this job. All we're asking for is basic labor protections. We're human beings, and we want to be treated like human beings. We want to be recognized like real workers. We want to be protected like real workers. The work we do matters. The work I do matters. I am happy at the end of the day to know my kids are happy. And there are so many of us across this country that go home happy, knowing that we did a job well done, but at the same time, we're so brokenhearted because there is no protection there for us, because there is nowhere to turn. And labor laws in this country need to change, and we women have started doing that. We women are the voice. We are the ones who can tell the story because we're the ones who do the work. We're the ones who suffer in this industry without any protection. And our voice as an organization is to continue to let workers know. We started the National Domestic Worker Alliance 3 years ago, and we are now in the process. There are over 2.5 million domestic workers in this country. Again, we are America's best kept secret. And we are here today to say this secret is no longer a secret.
We're opening the doors.
Right.
We're opening the doors and pulling the shutters back and showing you the face behind the work. We're showing you we are the ones who make all other work possible. It's because the domestic worker comes into your home to care for your home, your family, and your kids that you can go out and make a living. This works both ways. We give to you, and all we're asking is that you give back to us, because what we do is it's the most important. It's the most important work. And we just want for workers to know that there is a place to turn. California is getting ready to launch their Bill of Rights this week. Massachusetts and Illinois is also getting ready to launch a Bill of Rights. And it doesn't stop there. We've got a whole lot of states in this country that we have to conquer, and we've got labor laws to change.
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much. Ernestine, you mentioned that you worked with Verizon and you were a part of the union there. And now you're working at a different place of employment where there's no union. How are the challenges? What are those challenges like right now? How are you being treated by management and other coworkers that may not even know what a union really is?
Well, the company itself had people come in from Arkansas to hold anti-union meetings. I'm sorry. Walmart sends people to various stores to have anti-union meetings. It's very intimidating. They show videos. They tell lies. They try to convince people that the union is not a good thing to have, that it will destroy business, and that the people involved with organizing are just disgruntled employees, which is not the case. Like I said, I love my job. I love Walmart. I think they're a great company, to an extent. But it's challenging. It really is. You have your coworkers who don't believe in what you're doing, so it's a uphill battle trying to convince them otherwise. Many of them. And then you have some who are very much familiar with unions. Some of the workers there have other jobs, other union jobs, but for some reason, they're not convinced that Walmart should be unionized. I don't really know why. So it is it's an uphill battle. And the anti-union meetings that they have do not help. People are afraid. No one wants to lose their job. They don't seem to understand that we are protected by labor laws, unfortunately, though we're trying to put that out. But a lot of them just do not believe it. They are really afraid of losing their job.
But thank you for that. But one of the things that we talked about, I think, earlier was the fact, and you kind of mentioned this, how it did feel to have a union, and you know what that felt like. I mean, now that you're in a place where you don't have one.
It's a good thing. Like what's been said before me, it does improve your life. It improves your family life tremendously. You are protected. You have better salaries. You have better health care. You have better everything. You are protected. There's safety in numbers. There's safety in numbers, and you are protected. It's like night and day. It really is.
So what message would you give to those people that are watching you right now, maybe at a Walmart store?
Well, believe. Believe that it can happen. Believe that things can improve. Your life, your work life, can be better. Believe. That's what I want them to know. Just believe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Liliana, you shared quite a bit with us, and one of the things I wanted to ask you is how much do you make an hour? Because I understand you've been working there for 4 years with this company.
Yeah.
And what kind of raises have you received? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's a complicated question to answer because I didn't understand myself nowadays. I start with $15.35, something like that. And it's 3 years and a half almost, and I'm doing $15.76. Okay? And
60
again, no.
Cent,
yeah. However, you know, I'm not complaining about the money. I'm blessed with the job, and, you know, compared to others' positions, I'm making decent money. With this money, I support my kid and my parents because they are 70 years old. So it's enough for us. But when I was in Peru working, my opinion was listening. They were treating me as a person. Now I'm making the money. I'm doing the American dream. But at the same time, I lost my voice. I lost my chance to have an opinion, to say, hey, what about if we change this promotion for this promotion? Because I know my customer. They are going to tell you that this is better. I cannot have an opinion. And we are a fair. Our common, you know, with my friend from Richmond that I just recently met, it is that we are afraid to say something. Because they take it wrong. They take it that we are troublemakers. We don't want that. On the contrary, we want T-Mobile to succeed and make more money. Because if you are good, boss, I am going to be better because I'm going to feel secure that I'm not coming one day and knowing that my call center is going to be closed. I want that. I know that there is no job security totally, you know, but if I guarantee you that I'm bringing more customers with my way to offer and with the promotions I'm giving, I will feel the confidence that I won't lose my job. I don't want to lose my job.
Liliana, you were, my understanding is, trying to organize a union.
Yes.
Do you think that's going to be helpful? And how is that going to help the business, do you think?
It's going to help because by myself, I already try. I talked to my coach. I talked to the boss of my boss. And I went to HR as well. You know, and they say, oh, that's very interesting. But, you know, we have to follow the policies. And I said, oh, let's go the two of us. And we did the same approach. So it doesn't work. It's not working. And because we came too noisy, my boss came and said, you know, you are a very good worker, but we have to keep it quiet, Liliana. We have to, you know, do the things that we are supposed to do. Let them, you know, the big ones who went to college and have the degrees to think for us. And I said, but we have good ideas, man. We cannot lose that opportunity. So for not losing the rest of our jobs, we decide with this women in CWA to do meetings on a hotel lobbies, and it didn't work. So to make them feel comfortable, now we are having secret meetings in my apartment, you know? And they feel more comfortable because they don't feel that they are going to public places where they can take pictures or they are going to, you know, put in risk their positions. Because it is very hard to get a job nowadays. So we don't want to lose them. But at the same time, we have good opinions that may work. And even if it doesn't, you know, at least give us that respect that we are giving to every single customer that we handle.
Right. Thank you. That was great. Sure.
I would like the audience here to know that Walmart, this billion-dollar company, I've been there 4 years. They pay me $10.70. an hour.
Well, I would say to all of you brave women that are here with us, listening to us, that the stories that you've heard here are just, I think, a microcosm of what is happening around our country. And it's important for you to know that you are being supported and that you come to us with great courage. And many of you here in the room and here on the podium have already exhibited great courage. And courage is something we don't always talk about, I think, as women. Valor And you said you want dignity and respect. And that, to me, is so important. And I know it's important for this administration and for all workers. So you represent the voices of so many. And we're just so happy that you came and shared your time, your struggles, your challenges, your hopes, and your dreams. And that's what makes our country so great. So I personally want to thank you, and I think all of us here want to thank you.
Thank
you. Deanna, Ernestine, Allison, and Liliana, we all want to thank you for joining us today, for sharing your stories, and most of all, for your commitment to helping others. Your work makes a difference in the lives of so many people across this country. And truly, you are continuing the remarkable legacy of those women organizers who came before you and who helped to make America great. Just like we saw in the documentary, the Triangle fire that occurred, and the many women that lost their lives. There are 146. And many women, countless women, who continue to suffer, whether it's in the retail industry, whether it's in the fields of our country, gathering our vegetables and fruits, or people who clean our buildings at night when no one is there. And people like yourselves who are making a difference, and people who serve us wearing the uniform, different uniforms, who make a big difference here for our country. We want to say thank you to all of you. What I want to share with you is that across my travels around the country, I've seen so many different examples of courageous women who have made a difference, and working men and women that are out there, and all they want is to be able to stand up, to have their voices heard at work. And they want to work hard on behalf of their families and for their communities. And in closing, I'd just like to ask the women in our front row who are here as our guests to join me on the stage so that we can also hear from you very briefly. And I want to say to you that we are all coming together on this wonderful day, on this wonderful occasion, on this wonderful month that we dedicate to women, Women's History Month, but also to promoting good jobs, safe jobs, and promoting a good tradition of democracy in our country. So if we could do that, and I'd ask the women to please come up and introduce themselves, and we'll form our line here, and we'll get to see all these outstanding women.
Trabajo en un trabajo en una compañía hotelera. Soy recamarera, muy orgullosa de mi trabajo. Y estoy muy nerviosa.
She is from San Antonio, Texas, and she works at a hotel, and she's going to tell us more now.
Lo siento. Estoy muy orgullosa de mi trabajo. Cada día trato de dar lo mejor que yo puedo en mi trabajo. Pero hay algunas compañías que ponen demasiado trabajo sobre nosotros. Cuando ellos nos dan un uniforme para nosotros ponérnoslo, ellos nos ven como una máquina de limpieza y no como seres humanos. En 2010, dos de mis compañeras y yo empezamos a huir de la unión, empezamos a organizarnos y ahora estamos tratando de que todos los compañeros de nuestro hotel y de cada departamento nos unamos todos para lograr que nos traten como personas, que tengamos una voz, que nos escuchen.
She is very proud of her work. She's very proud every day when she puts her uniform on. Because they work such long hours, in 2010, she got together with a coworker, and they were working together and are working together to figure out how they can their rights can be represented.
Good morning. My name is Katie Hoffman. I'm a music teacher, kindergarten through sixth grade from Cincinnati, Ohio. My union has worked with our school district leadership to create a career ladder. I've been able to assume leadership roles in curriculum development, monitoring and evaluating teachers, and developing more resources for our children. Through collaboration and shared decision making with our administration, community, and teachers together, our union has helped make Cincinnati Public Schools a better school district. Thank you.
Hello. Mi nombre es Angelita Morrisro y vengo representando el Sindicato de Trabajadores Agrícolas de Carolina del Norte.
Her name is Angelita, and she's here representing farm workers in the state of North Carolina.
Yo fui trabajadora del campo desde el que tenía 6 años en México. Después vine a Estados Unidos, en Texas, trabajé de hoteles, nursing homes, restaurantes, todo tipo de trabajo. Pero cuando vine a Norte Carolina, volví otra vez a los files. Y fui muy marginada cuando yo vine a Norte Carolina, porque trabajaba 6 días a la semana y me daban $10, que era lo que me quedaba, después de que pagaba la casa y la comida. So ellos me daban vivienda y comida, entonces me vendían al precio que ellos querían. Y así tuve que aguantar toda una temporada de files, hasta que conocí a alguien más que me dijo, pues hay más trabajos que el FIL. Entonces me fui a un hotel, trabajé en hotel, tampoco me querían pagar porque se suponía que iba a trabajar 6 meses y si no trabajaba los 6 meses tampoco me iban a pagar lo justo. Dijo, pues si no me aguantaste los 6 meses, ¿cómo quieres que te pague tu cheque? Le dije, porque yo ya los trabajé. Pero así fui conociendo otros trabajos, luego regresé otra vez, ya me hice comerciante, entonces ya conocí. Cuando trabajé en las plantas, conocí qué es organizar.
I'll try to remember everything. She worked in Mexico in the fields doing farm work since she was 6 years old. Then she came to the U.S. and she did the same type of work here. Then she started working at hotels and nursing homes and was working many long hours without getting sufficient amount of pay. So she began to get together with friends and other groups to figure out how to be able to represent her rights as well as other workers' rights.
So ahora yo soporto el sindicato porque nos da voz, tenemos voz, podemos unidos, la unión hace la fuerza. Gracias.
She now supports the movement because unity gives you a voice.
Yes. I'm Bonnie Hensley Webb. I've been a firefighter for the city of Indianapolis, Indiana for 28 years. The career of a firefighter includes unique and often dangerous working conditions. And our union, the Triangle Factory Fire is a great example, tries to learn from history. Our union, through safety training and continuing education, has made us safer and hopefully more effective workers.
Good morning. I am Christine Dexter, and I am a Comcast technician out of the Fairhaven, Fall River areas in Massachusetts. We as Comcast employees feel that we work for a great company, is a company that we have been trying to have recognize us right now. We'd like the chance to sit down with them and begin our collective bargaining for things that we believe a union can greatly help us with as strongly as, I'm sorry, I'm nervous. We're fighting for a job security and most importantly, a voice in our workplace. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Eugenia Beck, and I'm a school bus driver with Durham School Bus Company in Laguna Beach, California. For the last 3 years, I haven't received any pay raise, and working conditions have been worse. Some coworkers have to live in substandard housing, and most of us have to go to the food bank to get our food. But since I have become a member of the union, I now have hope that we will soon have a good contract, and it will allow me to earn a living wage. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm honored to be here. My name is Regina Pixley, and I am a security officer working here in District of Columbia in the public school system. I've done security for about 7 years, and I must say that this year is the worst with this contractor. I work for U.S. Security Associates. They cut our wages. We have no sick leave benefits, vacation, or anything. And when I asked a supervisor about the wages in the union, they say be lucky to have a job. I am lucky in this tough economy to have a job. However, the luck is just not supporting my family. It's not allowing me to send my daughter back to college. This is in her second year. And I have to rely on food stamps to feed my family. So I decided to organize with the union to make a better way.
Thank you. Can we get all the women to stand here? And please, we have some more. Yes, okay. Nope. Okay, sorry. All right.
Here we go. Hi, my name is Carolyn Slay. I'm from Mobile, Alabama, and I work at Austal Shipyard. And right now, we are trying to get a union because we want wage equality, you know.
Thank you. Can we have you all move up and we'll put them in there? Okay. We'll move the chairs up so they can line up in back of you so we can see everybody. Here we go. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Sharia Cano Castellano. I am from Kissimmee, Florida, and I am a flight attendant for JetBlue Airways. As workers, we all understand the economic challenges that face our country and our companies. Even if we have to tighten our belts, collective bargaining allows workers and employers the opportunity to sit down together and find a fair solution that improves the quality of life for everyone involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Please join us. How are you?
My name is Tangeline Washington, and I work at the Hyundai plant in Montgomery, Alabama. I believe that Hyundai needs a union because it will allow me and my fellow team members to have a voice to be able to speak with management as equals, to bargain, to address the issues that we have with the plant.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Carla Stansberry. I work at the Symveo Envelope in Kirksville, Missouri. I work hard to support my kids, and having a union means that if I'm treated unfairly, I have somebody to stand up for me and make sure that I am treated fairly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tony Lardnoise, and I'm a business education teacher at Franklin Middle School in the city of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Wisconsin, as you know, just like Ohio, is the state that's passionate about the movement to preserve workers' rights in America. I, along with many other women, phenomenal women, as my sister Nusika would say, are the voices that provide access to our students to learning environments and optimal educational opportunities with which they can compete locally, nationally, and globally. Losing our collective voices is not an option.
All right. And with that, we want to introduce all of our guests. Please come forward so we can get a nice photo with all of you. Right up here.